Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay. In tonight's broadcast, we are dealing with Transformation Boy to Man, Part 2. And, of course, we will be coming back in the near future with girls and women on their transformation and how they go about that and what's the nuts and bolts and wiggle pins of that situation. But tonight, we're going to deal with other aspects of the male situation so that we can cover all of the bases in regards to this particular type of subject. We're going to hear from the Christian church today, and there are others that we're going to listen to in regards to this the situation that we have inside the United States among our young men as they attempt to try their best to be men. And so we want to lay some things out for them so that they will have some type of guide and to know what to do and what not to do in regards to making that transformation. I want to say a few things about responsibility and the importance of a man embracing responsibility opposed to running from it, because your responsibility, when you take responsibility for yourself, you cannot imagine how much freedom you can have. You have many, many powerful tools at your disposal, and the one most powerful tools that you have is your own imagination. You can imagine things and bring them into existence right there in your own brain. But in order to do that, the first thing you're going to have to do is gain some control of it. You're going to have to guard it. You're going to have to protect it. You're going to have to make sure that you stand guard over what you allow in and what you don't. I mean, if you are accustomed to sitting with the guys and bull sessions and talking about who went to bed with who and all this, that's worthless. You're not going anywhere with that. What kind of rims you going to put on your car, and who playing in the game, and all these things. And, of course, we already know that the men are running up and down the field and being paid millions of dollars to play. The coaches are getting paid millions. The owners are certainly getting paid millions, so that makes everybody else involved in the situation a cheerleader. I just thought I'd put that out there. And you know, you want to call yourself a man, and your wife is trying to get your attention, and you don't want to talk to her. You can't see her because you're too busy watching another man. Something wrong with that equation. Okay? Now, let's deal with the get a little more in depth of the responsibility aspect. What a man does is he's looking for something that he can take responsibility for. within that area, he's able to be most creative. He's able to gain more freedom. He's gotten a hold to the power, as we discussed in the previous broadcast. As a result of having the power, he has his own little library. So he's connected to his own culture and story, his story, and so he has a lot of reasons to be proud of himself. I thank the Creator so much for making me be born a part of the particular race that I'm a part of. I can't imagine going anywhere else or being desiring to be anything else. I mean, this is greatness. This is magnificent, and it is a blessing to me to have such a high honor bestowed upon me, to be born a descendant of the ancient Africans. This is magnificent. It's beyond words to describe. All right, Mose, it's now official. We just added all your law dictionaries to the Hawkins Archive. Just click on the link, Law Dictionary. We got your Bloomberry, we got your Oxford, we got your Essentials, we got your Bouvier, and we got Black's Law Dictionary, Volume 1 through 9. Check it out. One cup of coffee, it has gold. I brought the money, like your lawyer said to you.
Yes. How did we get this religion we talked about earlier? I talk about Star Trek, and we talk about the time warp that Star Trek depicts quite frequently, of how people move from one state of consciousness and one world and are suddenly flipped into a new world. They go through a warp, and suddenly, all of a sudden, everything that they used to use to guide themselves no longer counts. The language that they used to speak can no longer be understood in the new world. The values that they used to guide their behavior are no longer workable. In fact, it gets them into trouble. The gods, the culture, the nature of the social relations, and all of the things that they used prior to meeting the warp no longer suffice. Now they must learn new values and new behaviors and new orientations in order to adapt themselves to the new universe that they live in. We are in that kind of position today. Think about the African in the world the African lived in prior to being brought across the oceans. Think about the gods we praised. Think about the organization of our society. Think about the languages that we spoke, the food that we ate, the dress that we wore, the music, the song, the dance, and all of those things that defined us as African people. And think how horrendous it must have been for us to be thrown into this world where there was a whole new language, a whole new social hierarchy, a whole new set of authorities, people pushing you around who you don't understand, people who are putting strange tools in your hands, people who are trying to get you to relate to them and to relate to each other in a very different kind of way from what you're used to relating to. Think about the stress and the confusion, and think about the abuse. Think about the horror of that situation our parents and great-grandparents were put in. And there was somebody that said then, if you pray to this God, if you talk this way, if you dress this way, if you relate this way, you'll get a greater sense of security. Your anxiety will be reduced. You will feel good, and you'll be able to withstand the pain of your existence. And the God then that I'm going to hand you is one that I have created for you. And a theology that comes with it is one that I have created so that you will continue to serve me as you continue to serve it. And we come to believe in the veracity of that God and that religion. Why? Because we feel so secure when we follow it. And we feel so relieved when we follow it. And yet we wonder why, despite all of our prayers, despite all of our devotion, we still suffer the way we do. I often ask the question, why is it that the people who pray the most have the most of their children in the jails of America today? Who shout and kick over the benches and so forth, are filling up the prisons and have the children killing each other and addicted out here in these streets? There must be a problem here, ladies and gentlemen. We must reorient ourselves to our religion. We must reorient ourselves to our gods, because apparently we don't have the appropriate orientation. Because as that book you read says, you can tell a tree by what? The fruit it bears. And therefore, if it bears bitter fruit, or if it bears no fruit at all, the God you worship says it is but fit to be hewn down and thrown into the flame and consumed. Read your own Bible. It gives you a very practical measure as to whether the religion you're pursuing is an appropriate one. And that measure says, look at the fruit that it bears.
Okay, that brings me to the next point. I wanted to play that. A man does engage in his spiritual side. He has a good, strong physical self, but he also has a spiritual side. And he has to learn how to communicate with his creator. But he's also going to have to guard himself against religion. He wants to watch out for that. Religion is something that he absolutely don't need at any point in time in history. But let's see what's going on out in the streets, okay?
Can you tell us exactly what's happening there in Tulsa? What do you know?
Well, to this point, all I do know is that there has been three people killed, others have been shot in four different incidents, like you said, and it appears at this time that we have a person, a white individual, that has started going around and taking shots at black people.
And is this person still on the run, as far as you know?
Absolutely. They have not captured him at this point. I have talked to the mayor as well as the chief of police, and they have assured me that they have officers, many, many, many officers working on this 24 hours, 7 days. You know, they're going to do it as long as it takes. Until they bring this person to justice.
What can you tell us about the victims? We understand, obviously, as you said, that they were all African American. Did they know each other? What age were they?
No, the ages range from I think in the 50s to younger people, which I think 17, 18. I don't know of anyone that was injured that's younger than that, but I do know that allegedly these people are driving up to people that they see walking, and they're asking for a direction, and when the people give them directions or tell them they don't know, then as they're walking away, this person opens fire.
So the shooter is asking for directions as a
right.
decoy there.
Right.
What is the mood there? I mean, I would imagine that people there are pretty concerned.
Oh, absolutely. And we had a press conference last night, and we had all the news media there to really alert the citizens that the police department has assured us that they are, like I said before, doing all they can trying to bring this person. And they've had a couple of leads. I don't think they panned out. this person or persons. To this point, I don't know if it's more than one.
And as I understand, there was this meeting at the church last night, and NAACP members are certainly saying this could be a hate crime, looking at it that way. Is that what the mayor and the police are telling you as well?
Well, I think that they have not said those words specifically, but I do think that they understand that that could be a possibility. You have somebody white that has come into a community and taken shots at killing black people. To me, that would indicate that we have some kind of racial problem.
Is there a better description of this person at all? I mean, is it a male, female, how old?
Male.
A male shooter. Any
white,
idea what the
white,
age is?
White male. At that time, he was driving a white pickup truck, and the pickup truck was had a tailpipe hanging or something. And, you know, the people that survived naturally gave the information that they have to this point. And I'm sure that the police department may have other evidence at this time, but I have been in touch with them on numerous occasions. They're calling me and keeping me informed when they get leads.
And of the four locations where these shootings took place, anything specific about those? I mean, where were they?
No, they're all in the North Tulsa area, which is predominantly Afro-American community. And, you know, that too would lead you to believe that this is a hate crime because that particular area is the target area, and they went at four different locations in that area, and these locations are within a five-mile radius of each other.
So as a councilman there, what is your advice to community members?
Well, and that's what was my whole meeting last night. What we were trying to do was to assure the citizens that we don't need anybody to go and take matters into their own hands. We want to give the police department an opportunity and to support them in trying to apprehend this person. We need to cooperate with the police. I know that there's pockets of people that have not traditionally done that, but this is a crisis situation. A lot of people are afraid for their lives, afraid for their children, afraid for their loved ones. And if you can't walk outside, or walk down the street of the city that you live in, then that's definitely a problem. So we need to see this person apprehended expeditiously, and we need to help all we can to try to.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I just wanted to bring that little clip out there to let you know what is inside the brains of certain people and what they are willing to do for no reason at all. And so it's very important for the men to understand what I'm trying to get you to do is to go ahead and make that transformation, but make it correctly. See, when you are connected to your culture and your story, and you remove your centrism from the brain, then you are able to see clearly. You don't have to have some long, drawn-out situation to figure nothing out or under any impression that things are changed, we're in a new era. That means that somebody love us now, and we need to love everybody. We have to start connecting with our own selves and our own people and our own kind and provide support, communication, and protection. And the people that should start this, wherever you are throughout the United States, is the men. The men need to get up, put a remote down, cut off Dallas Cowboys and Los Angeles Rams, if they still exist, I don't know. But and start taking responsibility for your neighborhood. Look around, see what's going on. What are the youth doing? What's going on out there? Stop sitting down, standing by, and doing nothing. Make an effort to communicate with your people. Touch bases with your people. That's all part of manhood to do that. And it's very, very important for us to start doing these type of things. Okay.
Breaking news out of Tulsa, Oklahoma. Two arrests this morning in what they're calling Operation Random Shooter. A pair of white men now charged with driving around the city, shooting black people on the streets. Five victims, three of them dead. ABC's Pierre Thomas, who's our chief justice correspondent, has the very latest now from Washington. Pierre, good morning, sir.
Hi, Dan. On this Easter morning in Tulsa, some prayers answered. As you said, arrests have been made in a series of cold-blooded shootings early Friday morning. Police say they've arrested two white males, one age 19 and another 32, charging them with five shootings that left three people dead. All the victims were black. Police originally thought they were dealing with only one suspect. This morning, as word of the arrest broke, ABC News Radio spoke with Jason Willingham of the Tulsa Police.
We assumed that there could be more obviously involved, but until we got further into this case, it didn't reveal itself that there was two individuals involved.
Tulsa's nightmare began early Friday morning. That's when the killing started. 1 a.m., police find a 49-year-old woman lying in a pool of blood in a yard in the city's north side. She would die at a local hospital. Minutes later, 1:03 a.m., two blocks to the east, police discover two men with gunshot wounds. They are raced to the hospital in critical condition. 1:50 a.m., a 54-year-old man is found a short distance away. He's also been shot. He dies. And as night turns to dawn, there is more bad news. At 8:30, the body of a 31-year-old man is discovered steps away from a funeral home. He sustained a fatal gunshot wound to the chest. The city and the African-American community in particular were on edge.
I know hate crime when I see one.
With the city stricken with fear, the police set up a task force and vowed swift action.
I also want to say to the perpetrator and anybody who would attempt to aid or abet him, we're coming for you.
That proved prophetic. So as the city weeps for the victims, this morning they are hopeful the sad story may be finally over. Dan?
Pierre Thomas, thank you very much for your reporting this morning. Let's get an update now from the mayor of Tulsa, Dewey Bartlett, who's got some late-breaking information on this big break in the case. And Mr. Mayor, good morning. Thank you very much for joining us. It sounds like good old-fashioned police work made the difference here.
Well, it really did. Just good, dedicated police officers, good leadership, but especially the community coming together from a united point of view, encouraging the community to get involved and call in tips and observations. And at the end of the day, that through the media is really what helped all this come together and worked out well.
I know these arrests were made just hours ago and you're still questioning the suspects. But at this point, given that both shooters are white and all the victims were black, can we conclude that this was a hate crime?
No, not at this point. I haven't had any conversation yet with the police department or any of the detectives involved with the interrogations.
What do we know about these two men? I understand they were arrested in the same home. Are they related? Are they part of a hate group? What do we know?
I don't know what their relationship is other than a possible friendship. I know that we had received a few tips about one of them, and then it became apparent that the two of them possibly acted together.
Okay. All right. Well, let's see. Let's take a look. Now, if any of you would like to comment on what you heard, raise your hand, open up the line so you can give us your opinion of that. I'm looking at the man said that we have two Caucasians go into the black neighborhood, ask directions, and shoot people down in cold blood. But we have another Caucasian gentleman, policeman, that's talking to reporters, say, well, it's too early to determine whether or not it's a hate crime. Now, to me, I don't even think that question should have ever came up, in my opinion. But I would like to say that starting this weekend, right here in Florida, we're going to be breaking ground in on our aquaponic, urban and hydro aquaponic systems right here in our efforts to transform a neighborhood into a community. We'll be breaking ground this weekend for that right here. And we'll be encouraging the men in that area to assist us in dealing with cohesiveness throughout the entire area, because this is going to be ours. And we're going to provide all that we need until we can get to the point to disconnect from the grid. So situations like this, somebody coming up in your community and shooting you down, will have a something for them. Now, let's move forward a little bit more. And I want you to keep in mind, ladies and gentlemen, we have an awesome library, and I want to commend the brothers and sisters. I mean, the amount of progress that the brothers and sisters are making across the country who have this archive is unbelievable. They're setting up the trust. They're doing their wills. They're interacting successfully with their bill collectors, mortgage companies, and all kind of stuff. Student loans, you name it. I mean, I hear it all day long as it come in. We work together all day long, putting things in place and directing and making sure that the adults and their children are in a great position to control the brain by the type of information that's been provided in Tahaka's archives.
Be sure to subscribe to NBTV at NBTV1.com. The show that cares.
And so they want to run a game on you with this biological substrate number. A quick reference here to some tentative research that was noted in the New York Times Wednesday, September 16th. And you should read this piece, and the research is tentative, but read the scientific journals. But there's something interesting here. The headline reads, "Behavior therapy can change how the brain functions," say researchers say. Like drug therapy, behavior modification therapy produces metabolic, what do we mean there? Chemical enzymatic changes in the brain and functional changes. That is how different parts and areas of the brain relate one to the other in controlling a behavior, in initiating a behavior. You know what I'm saying? Like drug therapy, behavior modification. This is a non-drug therapy, right? This is a therapy based on social relationships between the therapist and the client. Okay, and that's what we are comparing here. And what does it say here then? Both of these produces metabolic and functional changes in the brains of people with obsessive compulsive disorder. It is the first time that behavior therapy, remember we're talking about a basic social thing here, even though there's some other adjuncts to it, a method that changes the way people think, and I'm emphasizing think, about uncomfortable thoughts or feelings, the way they deal with uncomfortable thoughts and feelings. This therapy particularly relating to obsessive compulsive behavior where people are exhibiting certain attitudes toward compelling thoughts and behaviors. So this therapy, which seeks to change the way they think about these compulsive feelings and think about these thoughts and these urgings that keep telling them to do things, has been shown to physically alter brain function in a mental disorder. And we could go on. The piece was longer. I brought this up to get those who might think that we only talk about rats. What are we saying here then? that the very nature of human relations itself can change the functional nature of the brain. The idea being then that even when they come to you and tell you that there's some kind of correlation between a brain functionality and a particular behavior, don't fall for the okey-doke that necessarily means that the society is not responsible for producing that behavior. Society shapes the brain as it shapes other things as well. I'll move on quickly here. The theme of black-on-black violence, the book, is that the alleged criminality of black males will be used to justify the repression of the African-American community and quite possibly its genocidal annihilation. In other words, the running theme of the book, Black-on-Black Violence, is this, that the alleged criminality of African males will be used as a major rationale so that when this society decides that it will annihilate this community, the other members and nations and people in the world will buy it because they have been convinced that we are innately criminal. And what I'm trying to get across in there then is how this propaganda is developed. This is why, despite what you say from a logical point of view, despite the fact you may say this is not the majority of our youth who are in jail, the vast majority of you are not engaged in violent behavior. The majority of people on welfare are not black people. The majority of people in prison are not black folk. You know, you can lay one fact after another. And yet what happens? The people still insist in seeing it as a black problem, don't they? When you lay evidence and facts before a people, even evidence and facts that they themselves have collected, and they still insist in seeing you in a particular way, then you must recognize that they are seeing you in that way because it is important to their own psychological state of being and because it serves their own interest. Yes. And you must ask the question then, why are they obsessed about projecting this kind of image? And you will see then that it is there to rationalize their behavior against you. They're not. And therefore, as I will say a little later on, this idea of arguing with these people point for point is not what the game is about. It's not what it's about. Let me quickly move on. I want to lay a context, because often we discuss these issues out of context. And I've told you before, as I've told you in Black on Black Violence, that European sociology, psychology, and so forth decontextualizes issues, meaning that it discusses violence or crime as if they do not exist within a social context, as if they do not have a history, as if they do not serve a function in the society. So you're made to look directly at the behavior and the behavior only, and to judge it and treat it without looking at the context in which it occurs and look at how the context itself may create the behavior. And even behavior therapy plays this game, by the way. Okay? You must start at the context first before you discuss these problems. What is the context? The context is this, that we are a dominated people. We are dominated by European people. Am I making myself clear? Yes. This is where we start. This is where you start. We are under the control of another people. We are vulnerable to that other people who are holding our lives and the quality of our lives in their hands. That's the fact you must start with. The second fact is, domination is a social problem. Am I clear here? Domination itself is a problem. It is a social problem, particularly for the dominated, isn't it? even if it's for the dominator, it's still a social problem. Keep this in mind. Domination, therefore, generates the very existence of domination means that a social problem has been what? Generated. Huh? You can't have domination without having a what? Social problem. So domination generates a social problem, and as long as it exists, it maintains that social problem. As long as you're under the domination of Europeans, you will have social problems. There are some idiots among us who think that they can leave the European in control of African people and get justice and peace. It is not possible. Domination is built on injustice. And you cannot then leave the European in power over black people and then expect to be to receive justice. It's illogical. It's not possible. Domination benefits the dominator. We are dominated because it what? Benefits those who dominate us. Therefore, the dominator benefits from the social what? Problems. In other words, the problems of black people benefit white folk. And they are created for their benefit, and they are maintained for their benefit. And therefore, those who dominate us have an investment, monetarily and every other way, in perpetuating the symptoms of maladjustment in us as a people, and they engage in interactions that reinforce those problems. That's why no matter what kind of program they lay out for you, it does not resolve the social problems that they claim they're designed to resolve. And I'll be through in just a second or two here. The problems of the dominated provide evidence which justifies their domination and supports their own domination. Ladies and gentlemen, one of the major outcomes of power and one of the major benefits of being powerful is that you can generate the evidence to justify your power and to justify your domination. Nothing's changed by this new initiative. All this said, well, their violence is a, what, a medical problem, and therefore, now the methodology for that is to do what? Cut their brains out, medicate them, so forth. But the end result is still what? Domination and control. Thus, the central issue revolves around power and domination and maintaining the relative powerlessness of black people and finding rationales for doing so. For a very sizable percentage of black problems flow from the nature of black and white power relations. These problems that we are dealing with flow from our powerlessness, from the power differential between blacks and white folk. They reflect the differences in power between us as people. Nothing else. No brain issues here. The issue then for the black community is this: how to break white power and the will of whites and any other ethnic group to dominate and exploit African people. And I'm telling you, any other ethnic group, because whites are not the only ones who are moving in place to dominate African people. And the issue then is this, and you must keep this in mind. This must be our agenda. This is our agenda, to break the power of people to control our lives. This is the agenda. An agenda set by us, not by others. Our program for change and empowerment, for enhancing the education of our children, for maximizing our quality of life, should continue regardless of academic and social debates regarding the social or genetic bases of criminality, intelligence, and so forth. What am I saying? We must keep focused on changing the nature of power in this world. Let, regardless of the debates about what is going on, if you get caught up in the details, you're going to lose the focus. One other thing, and I'm through. We got some people out here looking for conspiracies. I want to note this because I see a lot of this going on, and there's people on the circus getting over on the conspiracy number. And there are others, you know. Let me just warn you about one thing, like people. You must think in terms of a nation. You must think of yourself as a nation. It's very important that you think of yourself as a nation. Many of the issues that you see confronting you can become very clear if you think of yourself as a nation surrounded by other nations. I tell people, I haven't written a second book on the cause of violence, the economic cause of violence. But there is an economic cause. I talked about the psychodynamics in Black on Black. But there's another part of the story, which is the economics. Quickly, it's like this, ladies and gentlemen. If you saw Black people in the United States as a nation, you would recognize that to a very great extent, the social disorganization that we complain about, the breakdown of families and institutions, the criminality of our children and so forth, is the result of the fact that as a nation, Black people are suffering from a negative trade imbalance, from a trade imbalance. In other words, Black people have an overwhelming national debt. What do we mean by that? It means that more of your money, earnings, income are flowing out than what? Are flowing in. You jumped for equal opportunity, and you educated your most talented people, and you sent them away from you and sent them to work for other people. And the monies they earn, you told them to live among those other people so they contribute their brains and skills to your enemies and spend their monies among your enemies and enhance their power. And now they become neoconservative and join the attack on the African community. You understand what I'm saying? Anytime a nation buys more than it sells, anytime that a nation ships its wealth out in great bundles, anytime a nation lets other alien groups, Arabs, Koreans, and others, and whites, come into its midst and take its money out, and then let the drug dealers scrape up the rest and take that money out, their institutions are going to collapse on their heads. Your families are breaking up because they do not have the economic floor that they need to keep them there. Your children are going wild because you don't have the money to give them the appropriate education and recreation and other kind of things you need. You cannot build the institutions that you need to maintain the viability of your society because you're giving it to everyone else. And you're shipping it out. And therefore you suffer from it. Now, with this view in mind, what does this mean? You can solve this problem to a very great extent if you think of yourself as a nation, remove the aliens from your midst, and thrust out into the world and earn wealth and money and bring it back to your nation and watch its prosperity increase and watch the people become more civil with one another, build the kind of institutions to create the kind of schools you want. But until you do that, it's not going to happen. This is the program. Conspiracy, then. There are people out here looking for the mad scientist who made the AIDS gene. And now they're looking at Goodwin. Is he? Oh, he's the madman that's getting ready to run the nut sort of thing. And there are others who are in the government huddling around. Screw all that. Stop wasting your time hunting for the smoking gun. When you are a nation, you recognize one thing. When you discover the conspiracy, it's too late. Yeah. It's too late. When you discover it, it's too late. If you are a nation, you know what you act on as a nation? You act on capability of your enemy. They can be your friends, as a matter of fact. They can have good relationships with you. But the moment they develop the capacity to destroy you, you don't worry about whether they hate you or love you or they're conspiring against you. You recognize that they have the capacity to destroy you should they what? Want to. You don't search for the conspirators. You search for a way to defend yourself against one what? Should it occur. It's the fact that whites have the capacity to use AIDS that should move us to build a defense. That they have the capacity to destroy African nations that should move us to build a military. That they have the capacity to destroy our people in economic warfare. Not whether they are thinking of doing so or whether there's some person who's doing so. Screw that. Don't put the energy in what? Building a defense and an offense on the fact that they are capable of doing so. All right? It's necessary. So, ladies and gentlemen, our eyes, we should do what? Keep the agenda on changing the power relationship, empowering ourselves so that we can defend ourselves regardless of the type of conspiracies any groups have against us. So what does it mean, ladies and gentlemen? Keeping our eyes on the prize, and that prize is power. Power to the people. Thank you very much.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, late Dr. Amos Wilson has put it in a nutshell for you. I know yesterday's broadcast we talked about the different weapons that a brother should have in his arsenal when he's going hunting for deer. And the final weapon I want to mention here today is the one which is known as a 30-06. Now, it has to be modified because, remember, when you're in the woods, we do not want to disturb nature. So we want to make sure that this particular rifle has you have a day scope and a night scope that you can alter on this particular weapon. You can purchase them and to be all in one. But you want to make sure that this particular device operates quietly, and there are ways to do that. And so you can actually just get that information right off of YouTube. But I want to mention that as the one that is very, very vital when you're out hunting in the woods. Now, let us go on to deal with something else. I want to mention the fact that prior to the awakening of the Moors, we have people inside the United States, and we still have them today, classified as Negro, Coloreds, and Blacks. And as long as you're wearing these type of brands, it'd be very, very difficult for you. We have a Moorish American government, and I've also put the link to that right in the chat room. You can go and register there, and the national conference call number along with the access code is there right there on that website, and you can register you, your family, your children, which means that you are now declaring yourself a Moorish American. That is a connected to a nationality, and that nationality is connected to a specific landmass. So you have an opportunity now to remove the brands by attaching yourself to your own government. That's available to you. That's very important. In fact, we're going to do a little brief segment here to give you some background on the Moors.
Islam to all. Join the MST. You should hear about birthrights and nationality. For you are not Negroes or what you claim to be. In the name of Allah and Ali, Islam to all. Join the MST. You should hear about birthrights and nationality. For you are not Negroes or what you claim to be. Learn your foreparents' ancient divine creed. Since 1913 I've been planting the seed. Enemies planted, agents I had to leave. I know it was abrupt.
Welcome, I'm glad everybody was able to make it here safe. We know why we're here. We'll just do a short introduction for our guest and Dr. Jose Pimenta Bay. But before we introduce him, we have some basic, you would call it a protocol that we do every meeting or every lecture or every event. For those of you who are used to coming to events, you're kind of used to what we do. My name is Adisa Hannibal. I am Grand Mufti, so my job is to let everybody know and be aware of their present situation. North, south, east, and west. In case of an emergency, you contact the brother in the back with the blue daishiki, myself, and there's a brother in a white shirt who will be also posted up in the back. If there's any emergencies, any concerns, any complaints, or anything, you need any assistance at all, that is our duty. We represent the Mufti Force. If you break it down, Morris United Front towards Islam, from our perspective, and as every society, every nation, and every group has their own security, this is our security. Bathurst Street runs along the north and south direction on the east side of this building. You have an east entrance and a west entrance. God forbid that there is a case of emergency. You have 20 steps from where I'm standing to the west east entrance and about 10 steps to the west entrance. Since we do not have our own hospitals yet, the closest hospital we have is at 20 Elizabeth Street. That would be if you go east on Bloor, go south on Spadina, and you get to, you go south on University, and it's right near College and University on the street called Isabella, which is one block east. If that is not appropriate for you, 600 Avenue Road West, which is east on Bloor and then south on Avenue for about one block. Until we get our own hospital, God forbid, this is where you need to go if anything is to happen today. As we protect ourselves physically, it's always necessary for us as a people to protect ourselves spiritually. We have many formats and many different ways of doing it. The Honorable Prophet Drew Ali laid down a specific foundation. We are going to carry that out, so if I can ask everybody to rise as we go through a prayer or affirmation together. If we can stand with five on the left and two on the right, you can repeat after me. Allah, the Mother and Father of the Universe.
Allah, the Mother and Father of the Universe.
The Mother and Father of Love.
Mother and Father of Love.
Truth.
Truth.
Peace.
Freedom.
Freedom. And justice.
And justice.
Allah is our protector.
Allah is our protector.
Our guide.
Our guide.
And our salvation.
And our salvation.
By night.
By night.
And by day.
And by day.
Through her and his holy prophet.
Through her and his holy prophet.
Noble Drew Ali.
Noble Drew Ali.
Islam.
Islam.
Hotep.
Hotep.
Amen.
Amen.
Ashe.
Ashe.
All right, thank you. Please have a seat. Now we're not going to go too much further. We want to get into this lecture really quick, but by order of Drew Ali, to be proclaimed in every meeting. Dated March 18th, 1929. I will go through it really quick. Before I go through it, I have one advice, one word of advice. Get your pens, your pads out, and get ready to ask for questions. Turn off the cell phones if you have any, or at least put it on vibrate. If you haven't donated your $20 notes, please donate it to Cujo, who's standing by the camera right now. And again, questions and comments are always welcome. However, by request of the format that Dr. Bay wants to go by, can we leave them to the end? Because we will have a question period. And please give it to him, okay? He's traveled a long way, so let's give him the best experience we can. Islam?
Islam.
All right.
Thanks, brother.
Islam, I am glad to know that I have few faithful Moors among you, and all I desire for them to know the truth and the divine truth. There is a host of jealousy about me in the movement now by the same people on our side of the nation that claim it was only a joke and unreal. But now, since they have found out from the government officials and the nations of the earth that this is the only sole foundation that all Asiatics must depend upon for their earthly salvation as American citizens, they are working every scheme that they can to disqualify me so they themselves may take charge of the situation. I have noticed all these things to you long ago in the past. Repeat, I have notified all these things to you long in the past. It is through the faithful Moors that attribute to the movement of uplifting funds. The ones that paid their divine respect to me and the movement will be remembered. That is why I'm calling upon all faithful Moors to increase their faithfulness to me, your prophet, and your divine Moorish movement. I need finance, and I need it badly. Never before have I needed finance so badly as I do at present, so I can shove aside the discord that is facing the nation. It all comes through jealousy. Of my fame and nobility. The nations of the world will not recognize the movement without I, the prophet, being head. It has been proven by my works, which I have performed in the last few days. Islam?
Islam.
Thank you. I'd like you to show a warm appreciation for our Grand Sheikh, Temple Number 5, Moorish Divine National Movement, Moorish Word of the Round Table, all that good stuff. Grand Sheikh Kujo Adu El.
Once again, I'm Kujo Adwa El. If you could again give yourself a round of applause for being real about your birthday. I was sitting down and I just wrote up a little something so we could introduce Dr. Bay for today. So, political sorcery is and was used by the colonial inquisitionist nations to remove the political birthright of the Moors of Northwest Amexum, Africa, America.
So that's the credo, of course, coming out of a Christian perspective that was trying to encourage people to see, as Rastafari might say, one love. That's beautiful. And it's something that we should all aspire to. And it's something that I myself aspire to, even as a young boy growing up. But what I also came to understand by talking to my Uncle Johnny, who was a bit of a nationalist and came out of Moorish science, was that charity begins at home. So essentially, you must love humanity. But that love for humanity must begin first with your love of self. Well, it was very hard to have a considerable love of self growing up in an environment where you really weren't exposed to too much that had to do with the African world or Asiatic experience. I grew up in New York State. It was not Mississippi, of course, which for those who know anything about American history, that's saying something, right? Meaning that it was not an environment that was blatantly racist for the most part. But it was an environment that wasn't teaching much about the history of African peoples. And if it did, it would always present African peoples as a group that were either slaves or struggling for civil rights. There was nothing else discussed. There was no context in terms of, well, what were African peoples doing prior to slavery, prior to the civil rights movement and Dr. King. Dr. King is vital. He's important for understanding U.S. history and world history. Malcolm X is also vital for understanding U.S. history and world history. But why was there no reference to the legacy of African people in Western history that didn't involve Africans as slaves, but involved Africans as masters, involved Africans as engineers, involved Africans as teachers, involved Africans as merchants, and everything in between? That legacy was not something that was absent in Western history. It was something that was deliberately avoided. This is something that I would hear from my Uncle Johnny, who was a bit of a radical, and I actually write about him a little bit in the opening chapter, or introduction to my book. Uncle Johnny would always try to get even my own family members. I don't know about folks here, you may be able to relate to what I'm saying. We can be born of the same mother and father, and yet we're not exactly like our siblings. Some siblings take to what is being taught. Others, man, I don't know what that's, I don't want to hear that stuff. It's either too radical or they ain't got time for it. I was one who listened, and I looked for the truth, and it's what actually inspired me to be a historian. So when my Uncle Johnny would talk about the Moors, and we'd be, you know, speaking with neighbors who were next door, and he would say, you know, the Moors are responsible for initiating what we know as the scientific, or as he said, the Renaissance. He just said the Renaissance. The Renaissance in Europe. I'm probably 14 years old, maybe 13 when I first heard that. I'm thinking it's just my Uncle Johnny just talking again, you know. He felt he was feeling empowered that day and said something that didn't have any validity. And then I happened to be watching a movie called The Long Ships, which was made in the late 50s or early, actually it was the early 60s. Anyone here seen this film called The Long Ships?
Yeah.
Richard Widmark and Sidney Poitier played a Moor in this film. And just to show you how someone said earlier, there are no happenings, law governs all events, and this is coming out of Moorish teaching. I knew this was no accident. That shortly after my uncle would talk about this idea of Moors, and I'm going, yeah, it's just so much background noise, I then see a movie with Sidney Poitier that showed this obviously dark olive complexion, you know, later I would learn famous, later I would understand how famous an actor Sidney Poitier was. In fact, I was younger than Poitier. I must have been about 12. And I watched this and I said, okay, now this has raised some questions. What are quote unquote black people? And unless it's a quote unquote, and I'll get to that later. What are quote unquote black people doing as rulers and scientists, as were portrayed, you know, aspects of that film? And yet, I don't know anything about this from the public education that I was exposed to. Then I read a book by J.A. Rogers that was given to me when I was 16 called From Superman to Man. Joel Augustus Rogers was a Jamaican self-taught historian born in Negril, who actually wrote this book called From Superman to Man, which was about racism and how it was formulated as a result of a lack of historical knowledge. So what Rogers was trying to get people to understand was that people of European ancestry are, J.D. Rogers' perspective, your brothers, your sisters. They are not your superiors. That's an important point to make when he was writing in the early 1920s, 30s, 40s, 50s. Because most people of African ancestry, and even people of Asian ancestry, seem to assume, if they especially were raised in the West, that there was this inherent superiority of being European. And this inherent inferiority of being African or Asiatic or Asian. That's not going to make for a of one blood, God made all the peoples of the earth mindset. If you've already believed that you are born inherently inferior or inherently superior, neither should apply. But the curriculum that most of us were exposed to were doing just that. I remember, I don't know if anyone here has seen the movie Dragon, about the life of Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee, as a Chinese man growing up, he grew up first in Hong Kong, when he comes to San Francisco and Oakland, he made the point that people were treating him as a caricature from the old Charlie Chan movies. And he said, no one understands really the beauty of Chinese culture, or who we are as Chinese people. And I want to show that. And he did it through martial arts and film. He didn't hate Europeans. It had nothing to do with hatred. It had to do with a people. It had to do with hatred of a value system that was put in place, and Europeans were the victims of it, as were other people. You can only hold people responsible for what they know. You can't hold them responsible for what they don't know. These are the sorts of things that I began to think as I was growing up, and my uncle was this major influence, and I said, you know what? Like Gandhi said, you need to be the change that you want. If you want to change, you have to start to initiate that. Now, what makes this even more interesting, perhaps for me, is my name is Jose Pimienta, which is a Spanish Portuguese name. My father was born in Cuba. My mother's family, essentially, they were British subjects. They were from Barbados and Bermuda, primarily. And then there were others who came from Wales, Ireland, and, as I would learn later, one of them was actually from Fez, Morocco. And I only found that out probably in fact, probably it was the early 90s, when one of my aunts had said, you know, this the one who was from Bermuda, and she said, you know, actually, we had a family member this is a Bermuda accent, and there's a Bermuda accent.
Yeah.
On your mother's side, who was from Dockyard. Dockyard. Dockyard is an area of Bermuda. And this person had evidently come and was working with the British Merchant Marine. I didn't know that. My uncle didn't know that. Again, there are no happenings. Law governs all events. So this information, so what do I do with that? I have family who are clearly African, because then the Cuban side were people of African and Asiatic ancestry. Cuba had a lot of people who were Yoruba in terms of ethnic groups, and people from the Congo as well. Then I had people from Wales and Ireland and Native Americans as well. I said, how do we address this? Right? How do we look at this? As I started to study Moorish history, and I started to understand the concept of what Moor, people often talk about how confusing, well, what is a Moor? You know, it's such a broad term. If you look up the origin of the word, sometimes the term refers to people whose ancestors are African. Other times they say it was just a reference to anybody who was dark in complexion. Then you'll find more specific references to people who are said to be linked to the land of Moab, which is today the country of Jordan. Then you see other people say that it was used as a reference to Native Americans. Well, how can it be all those people? Isn't it just another word for black? Well, the answer is no. And the reason is because black has too much baggage attached to it in terms of the law. So if we go back and understand the law in terms of how, and it was noted earlier, about us living in a republic, right, in terms of the United States. The United States is a democratic republic. Rome was a republic. What could you be if you lived in Rome? What would your status have been? You could have been a Roman citizen. You could have been a Roman resident or alien resident, which meant you were not a citizen. Or you could have been a Roman slave. If you're not a citizen, you're a resident. If you weren't a citizen, you didn't have the rights of the citizenry, right? If you were an alien who were waiting to become a citizen, then you weren't a slave, but you still didn't have the rights of a citizen. It's the same thing in U.S. history. What my uncle would talk about, in addition to just these basic aspects of knowing our history, was also knowing aspects of our historical connection to the United States. I know Canada is a different situation, obviously, because it's a different history. And how to navigate that is something that, you know, we can talk about. But the United States is a democratic republic, different situation. So what I decided to do after I finished my undergraduate in history, and my undergraduate was really focusing more on Civil War history and aspects of Reconstruction, I decided for my master's thesis in history that I wanted to focus on the Moors, because my uncle had convinced me that there was something there. Now, mind you, the only information I'm getting about the Moors is essentially from my uncle, who's a member of the Moorish Science Temple. I wasn't even a member initially. I was just listening to him, and then I would say, okay, let me check that out. So I go to, I went off to college, and I said, what he said was true. Then I started meeting people from Europe, from Italy, and Portugal, and Turkey, who were telling me the things that my uncle was saying were true. And I said, my uncle doesn't have a college degree. But this was someone who was attentive. This was someone who was interested in seeking knowledge. You know, we talk about the ancient Greek notion of know thyself, which of course was, they say that the Romans borrowed, right? But the origin even of know thyself originates in the Nile Valley. That's a committed belief. Know thyself. Study yourself first. In studying yourself, you begin to know the world, you begin to know others, and you begin to know God. Now that may sound blasphemous in some people's minds, but how can you study yourself and know God? Well, again, we can have that discussion later about the differences in religion. As fate would have it, I ended up being asked to teach a history of Christianity class, and I didn't want to teach it, but I got a free trip to Egypt, Jordan, and Israel, so I took it. But as, again, fate would have it, that experience would allow me then to learn more about the different schools of thought in Christian communities. Groups like the Ebionites and the Adoptionists and the Gnostics, right? All of these communities that were basically giving a different understanding of the teachings of Jesus the Christ, that amazingly enough turned out to look a lot like Moorish science. So, that's a kind of general overview, and then what will help me stay on cue, because I can start to wander into different areas, because there's so much information I want to present, and that's why, you know, I have a PowerPoint so I can stay focused. But I then went on to finish a doctorate at Temple University after I did a master's on Moorish Spain and the rise of the university system. Some of you may be familiar with Dr. Ivan Van Sertima, the late, great Dr. Ivan Van Sertima. Yes. One of our hospitals.
Okay, Morris. I only wanted to present Dr. Pimentel-Bey on so that he can give us a little crash course in ancient Moorish information. I have a caller with the hand raised. If you all got any comments, or if you have questions, all comments in regards to boys making transformation, boy to man, go ahead and raise your hand and we'll recognize your hand. Area code 347. Come on in.
You know, Brother Tahaka, Islam, brother. I was just analyzing your topic, Islam, more. And when you said the transformation from boy to man, when you go look in the etymology dictionary and look up the etymology brackets, you come to find out that the word boy, right?
Mm-hmm.
The word boy in etymology means servant, commoner. It means to chain. It also means one fetted. All right? And that was a term that was always constantly being used against us as men among the Europeans. All right?
Exactly.
Albion, all right? And they were famous for using that word. And it's just interesting that we as a people have not really introduced to etymology, all right? I give honor to Brother Abdullah Bey teaching etymology. I give honor to Yafa Bey, our Moorish sister, and I have contact with her, brother, so we want to have her definitely on your show. But when you look up the etymology for the word man, it means mind. You know what I'm saying,
mm-hmm.
Brother Tahaka? So when you're talking about a transformation from boy to man, you're talking about from a mental state of slavery to the independence of a mind of a man. You know what I'm saying? So education was definitely the key All right, because remember now, Brother Tahaka, there was laws that was against us from reading and writing. We was not allowed to read or write. So we have to really look at what this transformation is all about. And that's a serious topic that you brought up tonight, all right, that we have to look at the psychological and social status of what was created by these Albions, which we know as European descent, who had framed us in this kind of context where we had to transform ourselves from a boy to man. Because when you start looking at some old movies, or even to this day, like Django, you'll notice how the Europeans would always use that word boy. And we as men always find the word offensive, but it was never defined. The word was never defined what the word was meant. And it's the same thing with like other words that was used also. These things was never meant, like the word nigger was never really properly defined.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And it had nothing to do with the content or the tone or complexion of one's skin tone. It had nothing to do with that. You know, this is the same thing like the word ghetto. You know, the word ghetto come from Warsaw Ghetto out there in one of the Germanic states. But yet our brothers and sisters use the word ghetto as though it becomes synonymous with our condition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, saying like the word boy. So it's very important to talk about a topic like this so that way our brothers and sisters in the community at large would realize that this term boy, that means commoner, servant, one who's chained, one who's tethered, all right, which is all relating to servitude. And the word servant, also, the word boy means also servant.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And so it's very important that our people out there, Brother Tahaka, really know that and look at and get an etymology dictionary. I always encourage to get an etymology dictionary, be it American Heritage Dictionary, Random House, or Webster's, Noah Webster's dictionary, the college dictionary, and look up the etymology of these different words, Brother Tahaka.
I'm pretty glad you brought this out. We've just added some new stuff. We'll be adding before the night is over. I'll be adding the Webster Dictionary. We already got Black's Law in there, Bouvier, all of them. Volumes 1-9 has already been added to my archives, and the brothers are in there, and the sisters, and they're actually studying. We're going to be adding the etymology. We're going to be adding Webster's and many others. Very, very powerful library, very powerful books, dictionaries, so that you can clearly define what it is when you're inside my archives and you're studying. And I certainly appreciate you being on here, brother, and breaking it, giving us the breakdown on that information. Ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who have any questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand now. We have 41 minutes left. We'll be able to open up the lines so that you can enlighten us or bring us some new information to the table as we proceed along in the discussion involving the transformation from boy to man. Okay? So y'all just come on out and let us know what you
think. The Michael, he seems like a cool guy. I don't know, he can't really dress, but other than that,
he didn't make an impression with me at all. Like, not a good or a bad.
Uh-huh.
I don't even remember him.
Neutral. Okay,
yeah.
JJ? Michael's got a twinkle in his eye. He's a young man, and I'd have to see more, but he seemed very open. Okay.
Yeah. I don't like Mike. Well, okay, I'm going to say that he's looks like he's native Texas, and being from Texas, I would have to support that. But I don't like him on the fact that he's black. Absolutely not.
David?
Please, please. And I knew this was going to come.
Please,
you know, I don't like him because he's black.
Are you even serious
I
right now?
Thing, you know, I'm a minority, but I got a problem.
Oh, I was going to say.
Please.
Okay, hold on, hold on.
You're like a minority yourself.
Absolutely.
You're like...
We wrote in yesterday together, so I am to assume, based on what you just said, that you don't like me because I'm black?
I'm talking in a general sense here. But the
general,
fact
but
is,
general
the fact
sense,
is,
general sense. How much more general than you can be? Then you're sitting in a car with somebody. You're riding in it. You said it. You opened it up.
Am I?
You did that.
Okay.
You
let me tell you
that.
This.
You
okay,
must out
thing.
Of your.
It doesn't matter if we wrote it or not. It doesn't matter. I don't know you from anybody. Okay.
You
we share the same
out of your
path,
mind to say
but
something.
But you know what?
Like
my personal beliefs and my personal experience. I don't like them.
Your personal
I never have, and I never will.
What is it about black people that you don't like?
This ought to be good.
Yeah. I'm strapping in for this one.
Yeah, well, strap tight.
You might want to strap me in for this one.
Well, the thing is, you know, based on the experience and the people I've worked with, where I come from, I'm sick and tired of people thinking, specifically I am mentioning black people, thinking we owe them something,
Wait.
That the world owes them something. I'm totally opposed to affirmative action.
Where are you from?
I don't want people to give me a job just because I'm brown. I want people to know that I have the credentials. You know, Polynesians don't have a BET. We don't get all pissed off when we don't have an NAACP that comes and...
First off, I just want to know where you're from.
I grew up on the islands.
Where?
Overseas.
Overseas, and there's no black people over there?
Where overseas? Like, what islands?
Near the Hawaiian Islands.
The Polynesian Islands,
I'm a Polynesian, yes.
When did you come to America?
And I live in the South. There are plenty of black people there, and I had quite the opportunity to be able to work with these people. And you know what?
These
no,
people,
I won't.
That is so un- and ill-informed. And so stupid, even if you didn't believe it. Do you think I'm going to stand up here and say I'm not going to give some money to somebody because they're white? I mean, you know, some things are better left unsaid.
That would be your choice.
Rather than have people really realize what an idiot you are. Now, I know, I mean, you are. That is just the most stupid thing. You know, and we, you know, we meet in the car and we say, hey, we're going to be friends after this. Don't take anything personally. I do take that personally. I do think it's offensive. I mean, the only way that we're going to survive as a people is that we work together and we understand that if there's one person that's oppressed, if there's one person that's a judge, and I don't mean as a people, as black people, I mean as a people who live here on this earth, if there's one woman that's oppressed, if there's one child that's abused, if there's one person that's discriminated against based on some superficial bull, you know, then we're not going to make it.
Get a grip, man, on how the world
get
really
a grip.
Works.
Okay,
really
let's not, wait. We have plenty more.
Let's hear from the church.
You ain't seen nothing yet. Obama's going to take away your citizenship. Obama's going to take away the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment of the Constitution, and he's going to send you and all other black people, Obama with Bill Gates and with Bill Clinton, are going to send you and all other black people to either two places. You can stay here in the Western Hemisphere, and he's going to send you to Haiti, but he's going to round y'all up from South Central Los Angeles. He's going to round y'all up from the mega churches down in Dallas. He's going to round y'all up from the mega churches in Atlanta. He's going to round y'all up from New York, from Chicago, and he's going to send y'all back to Africa. That's right. Bill Gates wants y'all out of America. Mark Zuckerberg wants y'all out of America. George Soros wants y'all out of America. And I'm going to tell you something, my friends. And not too many years from now, black people are going to be sent back to Africa, something that many say should have been done shortly after the Civil War. Well, Obama is going to be the one that put the policy in place, destroy the effectiveness of the Constitution, take over all your resources and your property, the National Defense Authorization Act, and anybody can be arrested. What that means is this. All black people are going to be arrested and going to be sent back to the West Coast or to the Sahara in Africa or sub-Sahara Africa, and there'll be nothing you can do about it. You'll have no constitution to call upon. No lawyer can defend you. There'll be no congressman, nor senator, nor judge that will hear your case. You run around here, Bishop Jackson, with Jesse and Al and all these cross-dressers, all of these transvestites, all of these race baiters and race slicksters and hustlers. You run around here and you let the devil get on the throne of the White House. And now in not too many years. You go read the National Defense Resource Act. Obama owns all property. You read the National Defense Authorization Act. Anybody can be arrested, picked up at any time, and sent to any country, and that is not for white people. It's for black people. They're going to send you back to Africa, and it will solve America's economic problems. It'll solve America's crime problems. It will solve America's industrial problems. He's going to send you black people back to Africa. The National Defense Authorization Act, the destruction of the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment of the Constitution. Obama is the son of Satan. I repeat, get down on your knees. Don't lead a press conference to rebuke Obama, but call black preachers and black churches now. You better hear me. You better hear me. You better hear what I have to say. You will be within the next 5 years on the west coast of Africa, meeting with your ancestors that sold you more than 300 years ago. You are going back to Africa, you black preacher. You black liars, you're going back to Africa. And T.D. Jakes is going too. You're going back to Africa. What Obama's going to do. He's already getting FEMA. He's already getting major transports. And he's already getting FEMA ready to deal with rounding up black people and sending you back to Africa. The son of Satan. Pray. Put on sackcloth and ashes. Pray and ask God to forgive you. And then maybe you'll hear what I have to say. Maybe we can stay in America. Maybe. But the die is already cast. The deal is already in place. He's going to round all your black people up. He's going to round all of you up. You can run to the mountains and try to hide in the mountains if you can. And pray that your flight be not in winter. And woe unto them that give suck during the days when Obama starts rounding up black people and sending them back to Africa under the National Defense Authorization Act. He'll give you money. And Bishop T.D. Jakes will be your president. And Al Sharpton will be the president. And Jackson and others will be presidents of various countries, but you're going back to Africa 5 years from now. South Central Los Angeles will be bereft and swept clean of all black people. Chicago, swept clean of black people. You're going back. He's the son of Satan. And I'm James David Manning. I'm the Lord's anointed.
I want to remind everybody you can listen to the Manning Report now 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on any web access device, your iPhone, your iPad, your Amazon Kindle. Download the app called Shoutcast, and there you have it. Type in the search field Otla, and you've got the Manning Report 24 hours a day. I'm urging people to drive with Manning. Makes the trip go on. Because that movement fits so well into the spirits coming out of Africa. And let me tell you what those spirits were. I talked last week that the Vikings discovered America 300 years before Amerigo Vespucci and 350 years before Columbus. They built a boat in Norway and they sailed to the Americas. Discovered it, made no big qualms about it. But they were able to build a seaworthy vessel that would sail the seas. In Africa, it cannot be reported in the history of Africa prior to the antebellum period that any black man built any boat that was seaworthy or built any boat other than a canoe. There are no monuments. There's no great literature. When you compare Europe, Scandinavia, China, in The 4th century China built a flotilla of ships like nothing the world has ever seen. And they sailed the seas long before Roosevelt ever thought about sailing the seas, walked softly, but carry a big stick. China built a major flotilla of ships. But if you study African history, you can go get the best professor, you can get Cornel West or anybody else. They can never show you one place where it's documented that Africans ever built a seaworthy vessel. They never did it. They never built anything. This is painful. And rather than saying, okay, you're right, we don't like hearing it, but we can't run from the truth, and we shouldn't run from the truth. What can we do now, and where we should go from here? If that's the case, why is it so? You're not telling us this because you hate us. It's true, then why is it true? And if it's true, that means when we are compared to the Chinese, the Europeans, and others, we have failed. We have not come up to the standard that others, and we need to acknowledge it, and then ask God to do something about it to help us move forward. Don't just get angry with me. But you know, it's worse than that. There is in the genes of the black man a sense of dependency. Let me tell you what I mean by that. Rather than an energetic experience of entrepreneurship, a go-getter spirit, a pioneer spirit, a maverick spirit, a risk-taking spirit.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we have heard from the Christian Church. We have area code 347 is still on the line. I'm going to open this line up again. 347, you still with us?
Yeah, that's me, Brother Cog. It's Trenchy. I'm always with you, brother, because I'm just looking at the critical issues that surrounds our people. And it's interesting because it is kind of reminding me what the prophet said, that you'll find out more of our good morals in the church.
Uh-huh.
You know, and you hear the brother just laying it out right there with so much compassion, you know what I'm saying? And it's interesting because prophet Noble Drew Ali stated that there's going to be some more of us sell more back into slavery. And there he is alluding to Brother Barack Obama, you know what I'm saying, being that he's a Moor, you know, regardless of what people say, even though he may be mixed breed, but he's still Moor, you know what I'm saying. And again, I was listening to El Sharpton on WBLS up here in New York, and he was on this morning, and he was talking about this black agenda. And I'm, you know, and then I'm saying to myself, like, there is no black agenda. This is what he was saying. But there is a black agenda. The black agenda always been there. It was called the Black Codes. All right? It was called the Negro Act. That's the agenda. You know what I'm saying? And so they're going to implicate that agenda on us, you know, and every single day. And, again, when we don't recognize that is the agenda, you know, we're going to be what you call – destroyed, because we just don't see or comprehend exactly what's going on, Brother Tanaka. We just don't see it.
Well, I have to agree. I wanted to put this gentleman on because I listened to him say different things. Every once in a while, I go over there and click on him, listen to him. I got one more plug here. Bam. I'm going to run this right here, and I need you to give me your opinion on what you hear. Okay.
I have a email here from Fred Double X, and Fred Double X says, Pastor Manning, I listen to your messages being liberal to see if there anything of value to your black community, to the black community, and I have come to the conclusion that nothing that you say is of value. You have nothing to teach. You think John McCain is a better choice because he's white. He has more ties to Saudi Arabia than Obama. He hasn't done anything for the black community and was in favor of the war, which there were no weapons of mass destruction and a gas or anything else to be found. Now, name a black person who would be against that. You are the only fool that's against Obama. You say Obama will destroy America. Well, the ghettos already look like battlegrounds after a war. So what would we care? What you really mean is he will destroy America for white folks, and you love white folks and kiss their, you know what, so you don't want to see anything bad happen to them. Really, you're trying to get this attention for yourself. You are not successful at anything else but being a nigger preacher. You are wasting time, and the white man owns everything. He's got all the money. And but one day Obama's going to put his hand on the Quran and get sworn in as president. Well, John, I mean, Fred Double X, you know, here you go again. Let me ask you a question, Fred. You know, why do y'all always say that the white man owns everything, he's got all power, and he makes black folk do things? Can I ask you a question? You're Muslim, obviously, a black Muslim in the Nation of Islam under Louis Farrakhan. Can I ask you a question? You know, when Malcolm X discovered that the religion that you subscribe to was a lie, when he discovered that the Muslims in Saudi Arabia have blonde hair and blue eyes, just like the Jesus that you run down all the time, and that you have been listening to the lie that white people were devils, and that's the religion that you belong to. And then Malcolm comes along, and Malcolm's discovered that the whole religion is based on a flat-out lie, that white folk are not devils, that Muslims with blonde hair and blue eyes love Allah and worship Islam just like he did. And when he came back and exposed that truth to the ignorant black Muslims such as yourself here in America, y'all killed him. And then what you said, here's what you said. You say that it was the CIA that killed Malcolm. That's what you say. You say that the CIA went and got Muslims who had been in the mosque in Islam, the black nation, for over 20 years. The white man, the CIA, gave the black Muslims some guns and said, go kill Malcolm. And of course, just a little skit here, the Muslim will say, well, why do we want to kill Brother Malcolm? Well, you want to kill Brother Malcolm because he's telling the truth about the lie that y'all have been worshiping in the Nation of Islam, and so you got to kill him. So the black Muslim says, okay, we're going to kill him. They took the guns, the shotguns, and went into the Audubon Ballroom and shot Malcolm dead in front of his wife and all his little children. Now, the white man made a, now this is supposed to be, these brothers were Muslim. These brothers were supposed to be stomped down, resistant to the white man and the devil. But you say, now the lie that y'all told about Malcolm's death is that that the CIA caused these black brothers to shoot him. You know, you brothers need to get your stuff together. You know, first of all, you said that the white man was the devil. Malcolm exposed that as a lie. Now you and the civil rights leaders like Jesse Jackson, Obama, and all the other black leaders and preachers are now saying that the white man is God. And Dr. Jeremiah Wright, the white man got the power. White man owns all the business. White man got all the money. White man comes into the community, 3 o'clock in the morning, sees a 14-year-old boy sitting on the stoop, says to the 14-year-old boy, come here, boy. White boy gets, little boy gets up, goes over to white man's car, says, you want to buy a gun? Yeah, I want to buy a gun. I'm only 14, but I want to buy a gun. Buys the gun from the white man, pays him $400 for a Tech-9. He then takes the gun, goes, sits back on the stoop, says, I'm going to shoot me the first nigger. The white man tells him, now shoot yourself a nigger before the day is over, which he says, yes, sir, white man. I'm going to, because the white man brings the guns. Here's what the civil rights leaders say. Here's what black people say. Here's what black leaders say. Here's what black people say. Here's what black Muslims say. The black Muslims say the white man brings the guns into the community. That's why black men shoot each other. So the black boy, 14-year-old, gets the gun from the white man. White man tells him, shoot yourself a nigger now. And so the white black boy goes and sits on the stoop. And he says, I'm going to shoot me the first nigga I see coming down the street. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. Let me see now, what kind of nigga I'm going to shoot? Can I shoot a nigga with a basketball in his hand? I think I'll shoot a nigga with a... Should I shoot a nigga with sneakers on? I think I'll shoot a nigga with sneakers. Should I shoot a nigga with baggy pants? I think I'm going to shoot the first nigga. I'll even shoot a nigga woman. I'm going to shoot because the white man sold me the gun. That's the kind of power you say, the civil rights leaders say, black leaders say, that the white man over have a black folk. What is wrong with y'all? What is wrong with y'all? What is wrong with y'all? Why? At first you said he was the devil. Now you say he's God because he can make a 14-year-old shoot any nigga that he sees. That's not true. The black man has a God problem. It is God Almighty, whose name is Jesus. It is God who controls the day. It is God Almighty who makes one man great and another man small. It is God who speaks and one man live and another man lay down and die. It is God. It is God, and the black man's got a God problem. He's out of relationship with God. Hence comes Pastor James David Manning. My job is to lead you back to God, lead you back to wholeness, lead you back to righteousness, lead you back to love, expose all of your falsehoods, expose all of your hypocritical lies, expose all your pimping preachers, expose you, tell the truth on you, tell the truth on you, black folk. Expose you, humiliate you until you come and worship the God who is God. That's what I'm here to do. And we need to stop this foolishness of thinking that somehow or another black boys will stop shooting black boys if Obama becomes president. Nothing could be further from the truth. You got a God problem. And no Muslim knows God. First you call the white man the devil. Now you say he's got the power to make you shoot your brother Malcolm. Is that the lie that y'all been telling for the last 35 years? That the white man made the Muslim brothers shoot each other? That the white man made a 20-year veteran of the Nation of Islam, the teachable honorable Elijah Muhammad, shoot his own brother in front of his wife and his children? What a lie! What a lie! And what a bunch of hypocrites! All you black people need Jesus. That's who you need. And Pastor James David Manning is here to expose you. I've got more truth on you. I just don't have the time to deal with you now. But wait till I start talking about that joke called the Million Man March. And now you got this sissy, this homosexual, this jacked up pimp out of Chicago called Barack Hussein Obama. And all you black folk with your nappy head selves are running after him and still shooting one another. I'm not through with y'all. God will deliver you that you might come out of your ignorance, your blindness, and your foolishness. And I will stand on the wall until there's no more standing to be done. Praise Almighty God. Let's go to the Lord in prayer. Thank you, Jesus. You are the one. You are the one. You don't tell us to kill each other. You are the one, Almighty God, that will give us truth. And it is the truth that the black man needs. Jesse needs it. Obama needs it. Al Sharpton needs it. Louis Farrakhan needs it. They all need the truth. For they are blind men leading blind children. And they all are falling in the ditch of drug use. Teenage pregnancy, fathers deserting their children, ignorance of the first magnitude, buying and shopping from the white man and producing nothing. They need you, Lord. They need you. They need you. And by the way, Fred Double X, you know, if Jesus is the white man's God, he sure has prospered that white man something awesome. So maybe you need to turn to Jesus if you want to be able to get your stuff together. If you want to be as prosperous as the man, you want to have the kind of power that the man's got, you want to be able to lead the nation the way the man does, then maybe you need Jesus because the man worships Jesus. Glory to God and hallelujah.
Okay. Brother, commit to you.
Are
you there, brother? Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm here.
In your opinion, based on what we just heard, what do you think about us? Because we just heard from a representative of Christianity. He said that we need to all have Jesus. What do you think about that?
Well, more. Here we go again. See, Moors know better. Again, the etymology is very important because we know that the word Jesus means justice. So it all depends on how you're looking at the name and how you're defining the name. You know what I'm saying? Because, again, you know, it means savior or justice. And, again, you know, if we don't acknowledge that we do need to save ourselves, and we need to do bring out justice, because it kind of remind me of me being on a panel discussion with Alton Maddox behind the bench up here in Harlem, New York. Every third Thursday, I'm sitting down with a panel of, you know, judges and lawyers. And one of the main topics, Brother Tahaka, was how to overturn unlawful conviction. You know, and one of the things that I said was that we need our own court system. We need our own justice system, which is what the pastor was saying, Jesus.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Now, the word Jesus, who was it that attached a definition to the word Jesus? And the reason I'm asking that question is because the references and stuff that I have and the studies that I have clearly says that the alphabet J wasn't added to the English language in the middle of the latter half of the 16th century. Prior to that, there was no J. So now we have a J, and we have a man named Jesus. So I'm trying to figure out who attached a definition to it. When did our ancestors do that?
Well, first of all, Brother Tahaka, you know, again, we're talking about etymology again, and that's basically one of my primary platforms. People know me from etymology, and I hear about this J not being existent until the 16th century, and I have to disagree with that. I'm going to tell you why, Brother Tahaka, all right? And you're going to hear it live from Brother Kamek to you. First of all, we had the letter J in our alphabet system that we put together, which was Arabic, all right? The European didn't adopt it till the 16th century, so you can't say that J didn't exist. That's not true. We did have the letter J. The European didn't have the letter J, and that's something that I hear people keep pushing out there, saying that the letter J didn't exist. No, it did exist. All right, you go to the Arabic jim, J-E-E-M, all right, is how it's pronounced, jim, all right? And okay. So you see the Arabic calligraphy, you know, okay, saying before that letter. Excuse me?
All right, now, where can we go and find this information which will clearly show the time period and who wrote it? Where can we find that at?
You're talking about the letter J itself?
No, the information
what
that
you're referring to.
The Arabic information that contains this alphabet J.
Well, first of all, Brother Tahaka, all right, we have to go and look at the Arabic alphabet system, as what you would say. All right, and when you begin to start looking at the alphabet system, all right, you will actually see the letter J. Not only that, the letter J is also in the Arabic system. The letter J is also in the Amharic of Ethiopia. They also have the letter J also. All right, so I have to put some chronology to it and show you what letters or what words that's being used with the letter J before the European. You know, it kind of reminds me of the letter W, all right, because W, again, was something that was created again in reference to the French, all right, with the norm of the Norman conquest when they went up to England. They introduced a letter called the WIN, all right, in which we know today as a W. So we're not just talking about the letter J. There was other letters that was created, you know, that were put into the alphabet system to control. All right. So,
all right. Let me ask you this: where can I go to find the Arabic information with the alphabet J in it, which would clearly define for me,
all right,
the time period and the author or the creator of it?
Well, you can go to Wikipedia, all right, because it's the information
Wikipedia.
Is Wikipedia. All right, that's one source of references, all right.
Okay, now let me ask you this. Who's the author or creator of the Wikipedia?
Well, Brother Tahaka, you asked me a critical question, all right, and I do hear what you asked me, all right, so I was not prepared to ask you who's the author of Wikipedia, because if we're going to go all night long about who's this author, what time,
what I'm trying
that,
to, what I'm trying right. to get to, what I'm trying to get to is I'm trying to get to the foundation and time period. The reason I do that is because I deal with people, places, times, and events. That's how
I
deal
do
with
and
study.
And I do the same thing too, brother Tahaka. And if you want the times, places, and events and people that's associated with the creation of these letters or the morphology of these letters, we would have to have an etymology show on that period. All right, I can do that for you. I can put a presentation together, and I can break these things down for you and show you where these things come from. If that's what you're seeking from me, I can put a thesis together, and we can go in on it, so that people will be aware of what's going on.
Well, what I want to do is, not worry about a show. What I want to do is I want to call you after this broadcast. Won't be tonight because I guess. Get some things done, but I want to get some things that I can write down and go to get the who, when, and time of all of it so I can compare it and put it in the exact time frame, and that will tell me exactly who's doing the writing.
What? Yes.
When they were doing the writing. Because I know...
That's correct.
That we had the Gutenberg Press that was created at a certain point in time, and then we know we had the Chinese that created the press prior to that time. But I want to line up all of the information so that I could pinpoint exactly who were the writers. Because if I can find out who were the writers, the who wrote it, the time period, led across the angel stories across the land, that would tell me that would give me a tremendous amount of information that I can use. So what I'm gonna do now? We ain't got but a few more minutes left, and I appreciate you for calling in, and I'll contact you so that I can get that information. So far, I have Wikipedia, and I want to go ahead and examine that and find out where it comes from, who did it, and when they did it, and then I can go from there. Okay?
Yeah. There's other references too, brother.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, as you said off the air, I'm going to gather the information for you and show you.
All right? Okay. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we come to the close of the broadcast, and I certainly appreciate all of you for tuning in, and stay tuned for more broadcasts here. We're going to, I guess, to some other things. We're going to deal with women and girls, and so y'all stay tuned. We'll book these shows and get them set and ready to go. I've been your host, Tahaka Monte L. Bay, and until next time.
Stop.